Good to see you, Luke. Praise his holy name. Go to the Gospel of Isaiah. It sure is the gospel. It really is. Chapter 13 and 14. And what we're going to do tonight, see, I told you at the beginning that Isaiah is best understood not as a chronological book. It's a collection of several sections of his sermons, writings, prophecies, teachings. And we just finished our look last week at the first book, which I call the Book of Emmanuel. And it's the prophecies all involving the child as a salvation. Notice that. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. And shoot out of the stump, the burning stump of Jesse that looks all is lost, looks like he's all ruined, but a shoot comes out. And the Messiah comes. And we learn that the Lord will preserve a remnant in spite of man's inability and sin, the sin of Israel, but not just Israel. In the first book, you got the vision of the whole world being involved. One day, Mount Zion will be lifted up above all the mountains on the earth, and the ends of the earth will stream up to that mountain, wanting to learn the things of God. All the nations are involved in God's plan. He has this universal vision of a renewed world. How renewed? Well, Jesus is the king. He's got the Holy Spirit on him. He rules in righteousness and makes his decisions by the Spirit and not by the flesh. Even the creation itself will be renewed. A child will be able to play with a tiger and a hyena and a lion and put his hand down the hole of a snake. That's what we got in store for us, okay? But this second book is what we want to focus on today. And this book tells us what has to happen before we can come into that golden day. That's the day we all long for. But it's about a burden of judgments on the nations, and what he does in this second book. Now, we won't go through every single one of these. I'll just handpick a few, two, three, that really, really, really apply to us. He takes every nation around Israel, and he includes Israel itself, and he proclaims an oracle of judgment on every single one of them. You got Egypt, you got Babylon, which is Iraq, you got Philistia, which we call Gaza today, you got Moab and Ammon and Edom, that's Jordan. You got Damascus, which is Syria. You have Egypt. You got Saudi Arabia. He has a burden from the Lord. For every last one of them has to go through a judgment. Okay. Every single one of them goes through a judgment. And it goes around the nation. And then he even includes a judgment on Judah and Jerusalem. And then it comes into something that's called Isaiah's Apocalypse. Isaiah 24, 25, 26, and 27. Kind of a mini book of Revelation. It involves not just the immediate nations, but all the nations in the world. And it starts, though, with Babylon. Which is where? In Iraq. Now, it all starts there. Now, let me say a few things before I read chapter 13. At the time of Isaiah, Babylon was nothing. The world superpower was Assyria, which is also headquartered in Iraq, but it involved Syria and Turkey and the city of Nineveh, which we now call Mosul. That was the world superpower, and it didn't look like it was going to go anywhere in the near future. It was so powerful. And Isaiah is saying, no, you don't even have to worry about Assyria. They've already done what they're going to do. That's what we talked about last week. The rod of my anger, I've used that rod on you, but they cannot take Jerusalem. They cannot wipe you out. They're not what you got to worry about. But he said, but you got to worry about Babylon. Now, it wouldn't be for another 100 years before all of a sudden, like a meteorite, Babylon rose to be a very, very powerful world power. But Isaiah had already prepared them for it. He'd already told them, they will take you into captivity one day. He basically told them they'll destroy Jerusalem, destroy the temple, take you into captivity, but God will preserve you there and bring you back. He told them all this stuff well in advance so that by the time it happened, you can look in the book of Isaiah and go, oh, wait a minute, this is right out of the Bible. So we don't, you know, we got to understand God's in control, right? And when it comes to the oracles of judgment, he starts with the judgment on Babylon. And let me read this chapter 13 in its entirety and then just pick out a few parts of it that'll stick out. 13 and 14 go together as a unit. But I'll read 13. The burden of Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amos did see. Lift ye up a banner upon the high mountain. Exalt the voice unto them. Shake the hand that they may go into the gates of the nobles. Now what he's seeing here in verse 2 is a military recruitment. The Most High is calling, mustering up armies. All the armies. You know, one of the names for God is the Lord of hosts. You know what that means? The Lord of armies. All the armies in the earth. That's what he means. Shake the hand. I'm going to lead him into the gates of the nobles. I've commanded my sanctified ones. I've also called my mighty ones for my anger, even them that rejoice in my highness. Verse 3. These are my sanctified ones. Now let me make a clarification. They aren't Christian, and they're not what you and I would call holy. They're not. They're just secular armies. Then why does he call them sanctified? Because God is saying, I work in all the affairs of the nations. I've set these people apart for this special task. I've given them the skills and the brutality that they're going to need to do it. It goes back to Isaiah 10. Assyria is the rod of my anger. He says, these are my sanctified ones. I've called my mighty ones. These are valiant warriors in my anger. And them that rejoice in my highness, that's a bad translation. Them that rejoice in highness. In other words, they're not lacking self-esteem. They're proud. And they are powerful. The noise of a multitude in the mountains, like as of a great people, a tumultuous noise of the kingdoms of nations gathered together. The Lord of hosts musters the hosts of the battle. So it's all the nations and their armies being mustered by the Lord. I remember in the early 1990s, we were looking at this verse when George Bush assembled a coalition of 100 nations to go against Babylon, of all places. Saddam Hussein. Now, the way I look at that is, look, that wasn't the end times. We thought it was. But what happens is these patterns get played over and over and over again as portents, and they become increasingly intense. The end starts at Babylon. He's going to get all the nations together. And that's exactly what happened with Saddam Hussein. All the 100 nations of the world coalesced, and it was, like he said, the mother of all wars. And it was, only he came out on the bad side of it. But verse 5, they come from a far country, from the end of heaven. In other words, they're coming from as far away as you can get. Even the Lord and the weapons of his indignation, what for? To destroy the whole land. They're going to destroy the whole world. Now, what's going on here? Verse 6, howl ye, for the day of the Lord is at hand. It shall come as a destruction from the Almighty. This is what has to happen before we go into the golden age. The day of the Lord is an oft-repeated expression. You've seen it once, you've seen it 1,000 times if you read the Bible. But all it means is the day of the direct divine intervention into the affairs of humanity. So there have been other days of the Lord, but they're all foretaste of the ultimate, final, complete, and absolute day of the Lord. Okay. By the way, all you got to do is look at current events, and you can see this world is a mess, a bubbling cauldron, about ready to blow. The day of the Lord, he says, has come. Therefore shall all hands be faint, and every man's heart shall melt. Now, that's one of the worst dreams that I could ever have, a nightmare where you've got to do something, and you can't. You have no more strength because of fear. Okay. He says, that's what's going to happen. at the day of the Lord and at the assembly of this army. It's going to be so terrifying, people won't even be able to react. Their hands and their heart, their inner man and their outer man, paralyzed, melting away in utter terror. They shall be afraid. Pangs and sorrows shall take hold of them. They shall be in pains as a woman that travails. They shall be amazed one at another. Their faces shall be as flames. They're going to look at each other, and they're going to be seized by a terror that will be very similar to birth pangs. Now, I hope that you recognize this language is used in the New Testament by Jesus and the apostles. I told you that they drew from Isaiah. They drew from, especially from Isaiah, but Jeremiah, Ezekiel, the whole thing. Jesus said, birth pangs have to happen before I come. Birth pangs that come closer and closer together. Paul said, the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night. And as when they say peace and safety, sudden destruction should come upon them as upon a woman with child. It just hits. Boom. Ready or not, it's coming. Okay. He says, the day of the Lord comes, cruel with both wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he shall destroy the sinners thereof out of it. Now, Isaiah is predicting several things in this chapter, and they all have a different level. The first thing he's predicting is the destruction of Babylon itself, the empire. An empire that everyone hearing Isaiah is going, what are you even talking about? They're nothing, and they aren't even a world power. And he's saying, no, I already see it. God showed me. They are a world power. They're going to dominate. They are going to be used as an instrument of judgment on Judah. And then the Lord is going to destroy them. Because even though he used them, like he said many times to other nations he's used, I used you. I put my people in your hands. You took it further. And he's angry. Okay. So let me go on here. Verse 10, the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light. The sun shall be darkened in his going forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. Now think about it. The worst day of your life, you can go out at night, look up the stars, and go, wow, there is a God, and he's good. And light shining in the darkness, right? When all that's gone, you know you're at the end. Like it says in Revelation, they roll up the heavens like a scroll. And you don't see the sun, moon, the stars. It's a reversal of creation. The beauty of creation. Let there be lights to govern by day and by night. And let there be a sun. And, you know, all that goes. I'll punish the world for their evil. People think that preachers like me are negative. We're understated. Because I don't think I could take it myself. This is God talking. I will punish the world for their evil and the wicked for their iniquity. The wicked is an expression that means already guilty before the court. Court's already determined they're wicked. You know how many wicked people are running this world? People that promote the denigration of marriage, the destruction of everything sacred, the killing of unborn children, the wicked, you think he doesn't have a feeling about that? I'll punish the wicked for their evil and for their iniquity, the wicked for their iniquity, which is lawlessness. I'll cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and I'll lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. Well, pride is the sin of the last days. Men may not have much else going for them, but thanks to psychology, they have great self-esteem. I mean, fantastic. I mean, they're not going to let anyone put them down. Not a preacher, not anybody, not God. And God says, I'm going to deal with this. This is an echo of Isaiah 2 and Isaiah 3 and 4. The lofty looks of men shall be brought down. The arrogancies, the pride will cease. Yeah, it'll cease when you're so scared you can't even move. When you're so scared, your heart melts. When you're so scared, your hands are powerless. I can't tell you how many times down through my life I've had a dream where I gotta run, but I can't. I don't even have the and strength. Right? It's the worst nightmare. What's going to happen? I'll make a man more precious than fine gold, even a man than the golden wedge of Ophir. What's that saying? A lot of people are going to be killed. Now look, what I want to point out about this is this. This is talking about a destruction on Babylon, which hadn't even come to power yet, but would do a lot of evil things, including destroying and burning the temple to the ground. And God is going to make them give account. But the reason the whole thing starts with Babylon is because Babylon is a country, or was, a city-state, very powerful. But Babylon is also a spiritual concept. Understand what I mean? The Bible, especially Isaiah, emphasizes the fact that Babylon is more than a geographical location. There is a land of Shinar. There is a location for the Tower of Babel. By the way, the ruins are still there. There is a place on earth between the Mesopotamian and Euphrates River, Iraq, that was Babylon at one time. But Babylon is a much broader concept and motif. What Babylon stands for is human pride, independence of God, and defiance of God. Like we first learned about Babylon in Genesis in the Tower of Babel. Okay. We're not going to go across the earth like the Lord wants us to. Let's make us a tower and a city and a name. Let's start a new religion. Why should we obey the Most High? That's Babylon. And Babylon is the whole realm of a globalistic human defiance of God and Christ. That's why all the way to the end, the book of Revelation, Babylon the Great. He's quoting Isaiah, by the way. Babylon the Great is fallen. It's fallen. Babylon is fallen. Let me say a few things about Babylon. Babylon, on the one hand, is beautiful. If you ever saw the city of Babylon, it's one of the great ancient wonders of the world. It was called Babylon the Great, and it's called that in the book of Revelation. Fantastic ingenuity. The king married a girl from a mountainous region, and she missed mountains. He said, I'll build you a mountain. And they actually built a mountain called the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, one of the great wonders of the ancient world. A city with walls that were 14 feet on every side, big enough to race chariots around. It was just incredibly powerful. Even God called it gold, okay. It's beautiful on the outside, but defiant and proud. And there's an outside of everything and there's an inside of everything. For example, one of the chapters of Revelation is Revelation 18. It talks about Babylon. And he says it's just like the greatest merchant mart you ever saw. The products, you can get anything in Babylon. And they give a shopping list in Revelation 18 of everything falsely valued. From the most expensive things to the least. And the most expensive is gold and silver, and then it has precious stones, and then it's the way you think. And that's being saved out of Babylon. The Bible says, run out of Babylon before the destruction comes. Don't be a partaker of her sins and of her plagues. We live in Babylon, and the day of the Lord is coming to Babylon. A terrible destruction. I was telling you about the chapter of Revelation, the greatest merchant mart you ever saw. It's gleaming shelves, shining little displays, everything perfectly put up. But then Revelation 18 tears back the cover of Babylon. Read it on your own. He says, oh, wow, every unclean spirit and evil bird finds its home in Babylon. See, there's what you see, and there's what's underneath. And really, it's hideous, because it's so anti-God. And the Bible says that when Babylon's finally destroyed, there's going to be a polarization in the world. A lot of people in the world are going to cry their ever-loving eyes out, because they love it so much. And there's a lot to love. You can get anything you want, every pleasure you want, every entertainment you want, every device you want, constantly increasing technology. People love it. But other people are going to rejoice. That's in Revelation 2. Rejoice, saints. The Lord has avenged the great whore who's been the destruction of so many. Now, they draw all this from Isaiah's prophecy. What's it going to be like? I'll shake the heavens, 13. And the earth shall remove out of her place in the wrath of the Lord of hosts in the day of his fierce anger. I'll tell you what he means by I'll shake the heavens and the earth. The earth is where we live. We people live on this earth, right? The heavens is where the spiritual hierarchy of the devil and the principalities, powers, and rulers of the darkness of this age. Now look, the devil hasn't been shaken since Calvary. Not like he's about ready to get shaken. That's going to make it even worse. God's going to make war on every single thing evil and on Babylon and all it stands for and everyone that has an allegiance to it. He says, it'll be as the chaste roe and as a sheep that no man takes up. They shall every man turn to his own people and flee everyone into his own land. At one point, these armies are going to be, they're going to see themselves like a wild gazelle that's being chased and trapped. There's no way out. That's the imagery. Or like a sheep that doesn't have a shepherd. What's more vulnerable than a sheep that doesn't have a shepherd? Like God, you know what? We're blessed. God's our shepherd. And you know it. So no matter how bad it could ever get for you, there's something inside you that knows. You know what? No matter how bad it is, wow, I have a shepherd. How'd you like to be among those who disown God? They no longer have a shepherd. All they are is helpless. All they are is hopeless. And he goes on to say, what they'll want to do at some point is just go home. I just want to go home to my own people. Everyone that's found shall be thrust through. Everyone that's joined into them shall fall by the sword. Their children also shall be dashed to pieces before their eyes. Their houses shall be spoiled. Their wives ravished. This is what they'll find if they do make it home. Behold, I'll stir up the Medes against them, which shall not regard silver. And as for gold, they shall not delight in it. Their bows also shall dash the young men to pieces, and they shall have no pity on the fruit of the womb. Their eyes shall not spare children. Notice this is a repetitive horror about children. But what is modern Babylon all about but the destruction of children? So how fitting that what they deal with comes back on them in terror. Now, let me talk a little bit about this because it's kind of, some people have a hard time understanding this. This is talking about two things at once. This is talking about something that's going to happen 150 years after Isaiah dies. Okay. This Babylon will rise up, become a world power, totally dominate Judah, Jerusalem, destroy the temple, and take all the children that they can out of Judah as slaves, 400 miles of Babylon, keep them there for 70 years. I mean, that's coming. And God is the one that allowed them to do that. But then God is going to require it of them, their atrocities. That's one thing. And he says, the Lord stirred up the spirit of the Medes to bring about their downfall. Okay, now listen. How did Babylon fall in the ancient world? Is one of your most familiar stories. The night where the king of Babylon is feeling so secure, even though he's being besieged by the Medes and Persians. And they get a drunken party, and he says, hey, by the way, go get those vessels that we took out of the temple of the Lord in Jerusalem. And let's use them to praise the gods of silver and gold. And they're getting so drunk. And all of a sudden, he sees one of the most terrifying things you'd ever see. A hand starts writing on the wall. It literally says he lost countenance when he saw it. Remember Isaiah said, they'll be so weak, their hands will melt, their heart will melt. He sees a handwriting on the wall. The handwriting is Let me make something clear. They knew what it was writing, but they didn't know what it meant. Because basically what the hand wrote on the wall is various coinages. Many, many tekel upharsin. Many is where we get the word money. A weight of silver or gold. Many, many tekel. It became shekel. That's a weight. And upharsin is a half penny. Parson means split. So you had a half penny. So they're having this wild party. They see this terrifying thing. And they know what it says, but they don't know what it says. You know what I'm saying? They have no idea what that means. That'd be like if you saw a handwriting, quarter, quarter, dollar, dime. Okay, I know what that means, but I don't know what that means. They remembered a relic in the warehouse named Daniel, who used to be very powerful in the empire, but not with this king. He was pretty godless. And Daniel came out and said, look, you've been weighed in the balance and found wanting. So Babylon fell that night. It's a great story, and Isaiah will predict exactly how it happened, so I'll wait till we get into the 40s where he tells, it's amazing what happened. Basically, Babylon was impregnable, but they did have a river that ran through it for their supplies, and they had these great leaved gates that were closed, and could they were made of brass, and they could no one could get through unless they were unlocked. Well, the Medes, Darius the Mede, redirected the river. He had his engineers out there and rerouted the river to go around the town. And then one of the Babylonian guards forgot to lock the gate. So they walked in and took the city of Babylon, basically without a fight, without even a battle. And in fact, it was so bad, they killed the king. It was so bad, though, that the people of the city of Babylon, it took 3 days for them to know they'd been taken over. They didn't even know they'd been conquered. Now, one of the things I want to say, that's what history says, that's what Daniel says, that's what the Bible says. But this is different. This is different on what it says is going to happen. You got a battle, you got terror, you got a world confederation, you got a huge army. How could this be different than what happened? Because what happened to Babylon is only a type of what is ultimately going to happen at the second coming of Jesus. God will call the armies of the earth to war. He will muster them. They will come out. You read about it in Revelation 19. The armies of the earth come out to resist Jesus Christ from coming back into heaven. It's terrifying, right? The Lord will destroy them with the breath of his mouth and with the brightness of his coming. But all this is a foretaste. Yes, Babylon that they fear, that they didn't even know was a world power, but they would one day come under the power. Isaiah said, no, it will be taken down. It will. It will be taken down very swiftly by God. But ultimately, there's a spiritual Babylon that never was taken down yet, hasn't been taken down yet. It's actually growing and increasing. The world is becoming more worldly. Verse 19, Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees' excellency, shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. It shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. Neither shall the Arabian pitch tent there, neither shall the shepherds make their fold there. This Babylon, that was a world power and a world city, and one of the most famous and beautiful cities in the world, it will be utterly uninhabitable someday. Now, there is a ruin south of Baghdad, about 60 miles, of Babylon. And people live around there, but they don't live in there. And one of the people that was trying to rebuild it was Saddam Hussein. Did you know that? And he was making these bricks, and he'd print in Arabic on one side of the brick, Nebuchadnezzar the Great, and the other, Saddam Hussein the Great. Okay, every single brick had his name in it. You know, he wanted to rebuild it. And man, he came to an ignominious end. I mean, they plucked him out of a hole, and that was ugly, scary, but also biblical in a way. Wild beasts of the desert shall dwell there. Their houses shall be full of doleful creatures, and owls shall dwell there, and satyrs shall dance there. Now, this is a very strange verse, and I'll tell you why. On the one hand, what Isaiah does is frequently, when a city gets destroyed, Isaiah predicts all these wild animals that wouldn't normally be in a city come to take possession of it. Okay. It's like saying it no longer belongs to people, it belongs to coyotes, or it belongs to rats, or it belongs to whatever, you know. Something that shouldn't be there all of a sudden is. And one of the things about that is that it's the concept of reversing Genesis. See, in Genesis, God says to man, take dominion over all the animals. That's really the order, okay? And what are cities? We civilize, we make a place where we can live, and, you know, hopefully hyenas don't live there, and, you know, coyotes live in the sewers, I guess. You can't get rid of them, but, you know, it's like Detroit. Detroit was ruined so bad that it was reverting back to the wild, and there's wild packs of dogs that run through deserted neighborhoods in Detroit, okay? That's the idea. It's the reverse of man's dominion. It's so chaotic because man is so sinful that that's been taken away from him. And now where there used to be civilization, there's wildness. But the other thing is satyrs. Satyrs, there isn't a satyr animal. A satyr, literally in the Hebrew, goat demons. Goat demons shall live there. It'll be haunted by demons. It says in the New Testament, Babylon the Great is fallen and has become the haunt of every unclean spirit and evil bird. There is a spiritual dimension to Babylon in its rise and its fall and its predominance. Wild beasts of the island shall cry in their desolate houses. Dragons in their pleasant palaces. You used to have a palace, you think you'd have like crocodiles walking through? It will. Her time is near to come. Her days are not prolonged. Well, this is coming to the world. This is coming. Think of how much more into houses and luxury people are now than ever before in history. Now, let's go on because the burden continues. It's the same burden, so we got to go into the next. The Lord will have mercy on Jacob. So he's switching gears. In all this terror, in all this chaos, in all this hurt, pain, terror, and wrath, and anger, the compassion of the Lord is for his people. The Lord will have mercy on his people and will yet choose Israel and set them in their own land, and strangers shall be joined to them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob. So it's going the other direction for the people of God. God's going to make a safe place for the people of God. God's going to, now we're already seeing this, but we haven't seen the spiritual part of it yet. That Israel has become re-inhabited by the Jews. You could say the goats and satyrs and owls are driven out. The swamps are being drained. Now, they haven't come to faith yet. They will. The people should take them and bring them to their place. See, he's looking far ahead after the battle. And the house of Israel shall possess them in the land of the Lord for servants and handmaidens, and shall take them captives whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors. So the last will be first, the first will be last. Everything will be switched around. The people that persecuted the Jews that live are going to serve them, and the Jews are going to rule. And it shall come to pass in the Christians, because it says we will be joined to them, the Gentiles. It shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall give thee rest from thy sorrow and from thy fear and from the hard bondage whereon you were made to serve. Now for 2,000 years, the children of God that Isaiah prophesied to and all the others prophesied to have been in exile, in hard bondage, in persecution, despised, rejected, hated, forsaken, blah, 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 blah. But Isaiah, 700 BC, said, no, look, it won't end that way. It won't. The Lord won't ever give up on mercy for his people. Like he said in Jeremiah,
I'm going to wipe out completely the nations that really persecute you. But you, I will not make a full end of. I will keep a remnant. It will come to pass in that day that the Lord shall give thee rest from thy sorrow and from thy fear and from the hard bondage wherein you were made to serve. You will take up this proverb against the king of Babylon. And you will say, how hath the oppressor ceased? The golden city has ceased. You take up a lament, but really what this is called is a taunt prophecy. It's a lament, but they're not really mourning. They're rejoicing. And they're rejoicing over the king of Babylon. Now, the king of Babylon, not one of the kings of Babylon became a Christian. Nebuchadnezzar, he was saved. It's the last one that got drunk with the vessels and that was a real oppressor and that wouldn't let the slaves go free and that really made life miserable and that wouldn't listen to Daniel either. He embodies everything that place was. Proud, arrogant, lifted up, haughty. But God says, you'll take up a lamentation against him. How hath the oppressor ceased? The golden city ceased. The Lord hath broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. Well, in one night, the king of Babylon was killed while he was drinking out of the Lord's vessels. He was killed. He who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke, he that ruled the nations in anger is persecuted and no one hinders. Now those kings of Babylon had power, and if they wanted to, they could destroy any nation they wanted to. They would. They did it. In anger and wrath, they oppressed and they used their power. Okay. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet, and they break forth into singing. Okay, now, here, I want to prepare you for something else. Okay, is that once again, it's a dual meaning. There was a king of Babylon, and this applied to him. And Isaiah predicted it 150 years before. But behind the king of Babylon, you know, just like there is a Babylon that's place, but then there's a spiritual Babylon that's the whole world. If there's a spiritual Babylon that is the whole world that God is going to make war with, that the day of the Lord is coming against the wicked, against these people that are already guilty according to the court of God, against these people that openly defy God, against these people that persecute the righteous and hate the good and exalt everything perverse, the day of the Lord's coming. Well, in the same way, there really was a king of Babylon, but who's behind the bigger Babylon? The devil. The devil himself. This is a taunt prophecy, not only against the king of Babylon, but against the devil. He says, the whole earth, oh, I can't wait for that day, is at rest and is quiet. And he says, and they break forth into singing. People will actually rejoice in the streets on the day. See, one of the things the book of Revelation says, the beast and the false prophet, they are unique to all other people. They're the only ones that will be plucked up alive and thrown into the lake of fire. The devil will be thrown into a bottomless pit. And believe me, the whole earth is going to rejoice. And this is the song that they'll sing. Yea, the fir tree rejoices at thee, and the cedars of Lebanon, saying, since you're laid down, no feller has come up against us. Now, trees in Isaiah, as we spoke last week, are nations. Finally, that axeman's gone. No trees are being cut down now. We just started to grow, and it just came. I'm telling you, in the 1970s, there was a place called Lebanon that was the jewel of the Middle East. There was a city called Beirut that was the Paris of the Middle East. And Lebanon had this distinction that it was the only Christian country in the Middle East. Okay. It's a majority Christian. And I'm telling you, the Islamic Jihad moved in 1970s and basically dissected that place alive. Raping, killing, murdering, driving Christians out of the country, just like they're doing all over the rest of the world. Okay. And they made that place into a living hell.
Can you imagine what this world would be like if we didn't have war, if we didn't have the devil going around? What's he do? He destroys nations. He seduces people into war. He inflames people. He attacks and accuses and just makes peace impossible. He says, the fir trees will all rejoice in thee. The cedars of Lebanon saying, since you laid down, since you were cut down, no one come to cut us down. Hallelujah. Health from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. Now he's talking to the king of Babylon, and he's predicting to the king of Babylon 150 years before he was even there. When you die, you know what's going to happen in hell? A bunch of the kings that are down there are going to rise up to greet you. They're going to look at you and go, are you kidding? You're here? You're as weak as we are. You think you're going to have a grave? Maggots will be your bed. Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirs up the dead for thee. Hey, everyone, come on out here. Look who's here. See, you can learn a lot from Isaiah. One of the things is that consciousness is continuous. It never ends. Even after you die, you'll still be conscious. And recognition still happens. You see who that is? That's the king of Babylon. He's finally here too. Yes, we're miserable as hell. But so is he. That's the thinking in this taunt song. How'd you like to have a song written about you like that? All the chief ones of the earth, it hath raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. All they shall speak and say unto thee, are you become as weak as we are? Are you become like us? Really? You're so powerful. You're so strong. You're so willful. Hey, no, you're just like us. You know what the Hebrew calls the dead? Shadow people. Whatever it was that animated their humanity is gone. Thy pomp is brought to the grave. Oh man, you had the best ceremony. Greatest wagons, forces, armed guards. It's all gone. The noise of thy vials. The worm is spread under thee. And the worms cover you. Now here's where he trips into who he's really talking to. How are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer? By the way, Hebrew doesn't say Lucifer. Lucifer is a Latin word. So Lucifer is the devil, but it's Latin. Ben Hillel, which means son of the morning. That's the real Hebrew name for Satan. Now, what's the name for Jesus in the book of Revelation? The morning star. The devil is an imitation Jesus. How have you fallen from heaven? Now, the king of Babylon fell from a great height, but not from heaven. Son of the morning, how you're cut down to the ground. You which did weaken the nations. See, this is what I see in my life. And one of the things that hurts a lot of people's hearts is you think of what could be. What could be. But Satan has relentlessly weakened the nations. Now, I've always been a patriot. I don't worship my nation, but I love America and I love the freedoms I have. And I believe, and I've always firmly believed this, that we died in 1973 once we accepted the premise that you can kill a child in the womb. We died. Can you imagine where we'd be if we had maintained the Judeo-Christian outlook?
He says, you weaken the nations. Man, do they ever. Abortions weaken the whole world. So is philosophies like communism and socialism and Marxism and all the isms. They actually just gut nations. Any nation. India should be the richest place on earth, but the idols. The devil has weakened them. They just can't think straight. Islamic world, perpetually bankrupt, backwards, violent, nasty, brutish. Why? Arabs are clever people. Arabs are noble people in so many ways. The devil's religion has weakened them. He says, you said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. And I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. And I will be like the Most High. Whoa, that's the self-talk of the devil. I mean, it may have been what the king of Babylon said too. That's pretty Babylonian philosophy. But that is definitely the devil. I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. You know who the stars of God are? The angels. I'll sit on the mount of the congregation. Do you know there's a congregation of angels? And sitting in the midst of that congregation is the Ancient of Days. And those angels adore him day and night. And what did Lucifer say? No, I want to take that chair. I want that. And he said, I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. Do you know that God dwells in clouds of glory? He wants to be above that. I will be like the Most High. Think about it. How many Most Highs can there be? There can't be two, only one. Yet you will be brought down to hell. Just like that, all his ambitions. Phew. By the way, this whole passage is a song. And Bible translators and scholars say, this is the most brilliantly composed song they've ever seen. Okay, this taunt prophecy against Lucifer. Yet you will be brought down to hell. Now I remember Jesus quoted this in Matthew 11 when he said, you, Capernaum, will you be ascending to heaven? He put it in the form of a question. And then he said, no, you will be brought down to hell. Now, why did Jesus compare the city of Capernaum to Satan? Because they have this in common. Satan saw the glory of God and still rebelled. Capernaum saw the works of Jesus and still rebelled. So Jesus said, like Satan, you're going to hell. He says, to the sides of the pit, they that see thee shall narrowly look on thee and consider thee. They will look at you. They'll stare at you, is what he said literally. They will stare, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that shook the kingdoms? That made the world as a wilderness and destroyed the cities thereof, that wouldn't open the prison house and let the prisoners go? Boy, there's a lot of prisoners in this world, a lot of slaves. All the kings of the nations, even all of them, lie in glory. Everyone in his own house is going back to the king of Babylon. They all have their house, which means a mausoleum or a pyramid or something. All the kings of the earth have their own glory. But you, you're cast out of thy grave. The word cast out is the word Netzar. Remember, Jesus is the Netzar. He shot out. But the devil and the king of Babylon are the Netzar. Close, but not the same. They're cast out. You're cast out of their grave like an abominable branch, and it's a raiment of those that are slain. You're thrust through with the sword. They go down to the stones of the pit as a carcass trodden under feet. The clothing of someone slain. I mean, who can reuse it? It's just ruined.
They bled in it. They rotted in it. He said, that's you.
You shall not be joined with them in burial.
This is a sick thing. Nebuchadnezzar became a Christian. He believed in God and really worshipped him and put a tract out from one end of the earth to the other. He truly was great. That was the grandfather of Belshazzar. And God, Isaiah predicted, you won't be joining him in death. You're not going where he went.
Because you destroyed thy land and you slayed thy people, and the seed of evildoers will never be renowned.
And he goes on to talk about the judgment again.
Prepare slaughter for his children for the iniquity of their fathers, that they do not rise, nor possess the land, nor fill the face of the world with cities.
All the children. See, the last thing that happened to the sons of David, that it almost looked like the promise was just wiped out. It was totally demoralizing. Was that the last king that was a son of David was Zedekiah, and he had two sons that would have been kings. They were slain, and then his eyes were put out. So there was no more. That was the devil trying to wipe out the sons of David, and that was the judgment of God. Now the same thing happens to Belshazzar. His grandfather was probably the one that did the early thing. He won't have a son. He won't have a nephew. He won't have a remnant. Verse 22, I'll raise up against them, saith the Lord of hosts. I'll cut off from Babylon the name and remnant and son and nephew, saith the Lord. I'll make it a possession of the bittern and the pools of water. I will sweep it, what it literally says, with the broom of destruction. Whoosh, 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 saith the Lord of hosts. On and on it goes. And then he gives them an assurance. Because remember, at this time, Babylon wasn't the power. Assyria was the superpower that took 10 tribes of Israel never to be seen again. So the people are like, what? We don't have to worry about the Assyrian. We have to worry about the Babylonians? And then Isaiah gives them a short-term thing where they can see it happen. They'll know that he's right. Verse 25, I'll break the Assyrian in my land, and on my mountains tread him underfoot. Then shall his yoke depart from off them. His burden will depart from off their shoulders. This is the purpose that's purposed on the whole earth. This is the hand that is stretched out upon all the nations. For the Lord of hosts hath purposed, and who shall disannul it? And his hand is stretched out. Who can turn it back? And that's enough for tonight. But my God, I thank you that even in the midst of judgment, that you remember mercy, that you remember your people, that you want to make a good place for us, and that you want to renew this earth. I can't wait till we all sing for joy at the defeat of the devil and at the time of the millennium that's soon to dawn, and the universal peace and love and prosperity and joy that the Messiah will bring into this world. Between now and the time of the rapture, Lord, whenever that is, make us useful. Fill us with thy Spirit. In Jesus' name.